This podcast is brought to you by MyScore IQ. MyScore IQ services are here to help you be prepared when it comes to making big financial decisions, such as buying or refinancing your home or purchasing that new car. Try it out for only $1 for a 7-day trial. You'll receive your FICO scores from all three major credit bureaus, along with active credit report monitoring and alerts for changes to your credit report and possible suspicious activity.
MyScore IQ services can help you be in the best position possible when you take that step to apply for a home or auto loan, all for $1 for a 7-day trial. Visit MyScoreIQ.com/Todd to learn more. That's MyScoreIQ.com/Todd.
Welcome back to the Talking Stocks podcast. It's what we do. Joe and Todd with you here as always. Todd, happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, Joe.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week in the markets, specifically crypto. You know, there was the classic crypto crash that seems to happen every month or so, almost like clockwork. And the very, very quick rebound afterwards. It's a very strange thing to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just been a crazy ride in crypto. It just goes to show you just how volatile this thing is and, you know, why you really shouldn't be betting more than you can afford to lose. I mean, treat it like a Foxwoods weekend or something like that, and you get some entertainment value out of it. But man, don't put money you might need next week, next month, or the next year, or the next 3 years in this thing, because we have no idea what direction it's going to go, and we have no idea what kind of regulatory hiccups it may face, and we have no idea what Elon Musk is going to say. So you put all that together in a big bowl, and it creates a whole heck of a lot of volatility that a lot of investors probably aren't too fond of.
Yeah, I really realized this week that the whole crypto market right now is, like, we've talked about the whole buy the rumor, sell the news kind of pattern on this show before in the stock market. But in cryptos, it's like buy the rumor, sell the news amplified, if that makes any sense. Like whatever a stock would do, like selling the news or buying the rumor, crypto does it times 10, which is really, really frustrating.
Yeah, I imagine as it gets more mature and there's more volume and there's more market participants and there's more, for lack of a better term, strong hands, institutional money, invested in it, that maybe you'll see that volatility smooth out over time. But it is absolutely, you know, who knows where we go kind of thing. I mean, people will go back and they say, hey, in 2017, Bitcoin got absolutely hammered. And if you bought it when it got hammered, you rode it back up to 60 something thousand before this pullback to 30,000. She's just saying that in 3 weeks, you go back 50%, you know, but, you know, and you see that across the board and all the different cryptos, you know, and, you know, they used to have this thing where if you saw it on the cover of a national magazine, it was usually the death knell, you know, and, you know, so you look at these covers and you'd be like, oh man, they just killed it. That's the end of the rally. It's kind of almost like the, you know, Sports Illustrated cover, Sports Illustrated jinx type of thing, only for the stock market.
Right.
And, you know, sure enough, you know, we had Musk going on SNL. We had, you know, every newspaper talking about it. We had all of the financial media putting the little Bitcoin live ticker, right? I mean, those are all, I suppose, things showing that, you know, yeah, you've reached max enthusiasm, at least short term. So who knows where we trade from there? I'm still hodling my crypto experiment. I think I talked on the show about a month ago that I had sold half my Ethereum when it doubled. So actually, you know, I could actually go to zero in all my crypto and still break even on the trade because of that. Because Ethereum, I had 80% of my crypto is in Ethereum and it doubled. So, you know, I mean, that's a fortunate place to be in, but it also reinforces, Joe, that thing that we've talked on the show about before where, you know, I like to sell verticals. When we get a vertical move in a stock or in this case, a crypto, it makes sense to take some off the table and to put in your pocket. So if listeners, if you didn't get a chance to do that, it's a good lesson learned, right? Maybe that's part of the rules that you're writing down, because hopefully as you're learning and you're trading and you're investing, you're creating this set of rules that's repeatable, and, you know, unemotional, right? And because, you know, in my career, I know that whenever I didn't listen to my rules, whenever I didn't have anything to govern it, I acted emotionally. And when you act emotionally, you lose money. 9 times out of 10, you lose money. So yeah, good lessons learned, no doubt.
You're absolutely right. And just one last thing to kind of close out this conversation. Like, there will absolutely, if this isn't obvious, there will absolutely be another one of those vertical crypto movements in the near future, probably in the next month. So hang in there, and yeah, definitely seek those out.
Yeah, so, though don't invest based on that though,
because don't count on it.
You know, volatility doesn't, just because something goes down doesn't mean it can go up. And we've seen that actually with stocks, right, Joe? We've seen a whole bunch of these SPACs and the pre-revenue companies that maybe, you know, had a very, very high valuation that's retreated significantly. And, you know, the temptation as an investor is to say, well, I'll just ride it out because I'll get back to flat, and then I'll sell when I get back to flat. And the thing you have to remember is that if you started here and now you're down here, well, in between here and here, there's a whole bunch of people who also bought, who are also saying, oh, if I can just get back to flat, I'll sell. So that overhead resistance as the stock is rising again is significant, because every time it's getting up to there, the people coming in and selling, people coming in and selling. And some stocks, yeah, I hate to say it, I mean, they just won't. They just will not get back. I tweeted this week, Joe, you probably saw it. I engaged with some different people online and stuff. And I was like, you know, is it your best idea? You know, because that makes the decision a little bit simpler, right, Joe? You can say to yourself, okay, I'm in the stock, I'm down on it, I want to make my money back. Well, is that the right idea to make your money back? Or do you have a better idea? Because the opportunity cost is not, it's not just holding on to that losing stock, right? Is that money is tied up and can't be redeployed in something else that you might like better, or might recover your money faster. So don't get married to the idea. If it's not a high conviction idea for you, and you have another idea you like more, consider selling it, taking the loss, and going with the idea you like more.
Yeah, I've been doing a little bit of that in the past few months or so, and it's definitely a wise decision. And then also, whenever you open up your account or your terminal, you don't get that figurative kind of slap in the face, like, oh, this is down 40% or 20% or whatever it is. So it's a little bit of a morale boost too.
Yeah, that's a great point, because it's like a gut check, and it's mentally draining, right, to see those losses. And it's crazy how cathartic it is when you press that sell button. And, you know, I don't know if the same thing, you experience the same thing, Joe, but I know when I clean house in my portfolio, when I go through and I find a bunch of stocks I want to get rid of, by the time I've clicked the sell a couple times, those other sell buttons, I'm just, bam.
They're so easy. Yeah. Oh,
so easy. It's like, gone.
Yeah. I was looking at one of my holdings today that I bought. When did I buy it? I can't see it on the screen. Anyway, Ollie's Bargain Outlet. Symbol OLLI, and at the time it was high scoring in our research, and to my knowledge it's definitely not on the top list anymore. What do you know what its score is right now, Todd?
It's got to be, just based on looking at the money flow, I just pulled up the chart really quick, and you've got tons of sell volume over the last 90 days, and that thing, just based on that alone, tells me that at best it's a neutral, and it could be even worse than that, because it's now probably more than 5% below its 200-day moving average. And that's where we really start punishing it with the score. You know, that's one of those weird stocks, though, that I feel like has these huge moves and then these up, and then, you know, go sideways for a little bit, and then it'll have a huge drop, and then go sideways for a little, and a huge run. It's almost like one of those stories where you can say to yourself, okay, you know, how much conviction do I have in Ollie's Army? And maybe at this point, I'm just going to ignore scores, I'm going to ignore the chart, and I'm just going to look at the fact that, you know, this company has enough room to build, I don't know, but 300 more stores or something like that. And they do have a relatively passionate evangelical style of following. And, you know, if your assumption is that, you know, people are going to go back out and start shopping in physical stores again, you know, I mean, to that point, Joe, just because a score falls out of the best list or just because a chart is broken doesn't mean I'm going to sell it. You know, you just have to decide whether or not you want to be a, whether or not your conviction in that story, right, is high enough to warrant you keeping it relative to your alternative choices.
Exactly. That's where I'm at right now. And it seems that every day I open up my Fidelity terminal, it's close to the bottom of the list. Today, again, down 2.5%. I'm looking at it right now. I'm down almost 20% on it. And I'm just thinking to myself, I don't have enough cash available to buy some things that I want to buy right now that are high scoring in our research. And there's definitely a good chance on Monday that I might cut it loose. We'll see what
happens. Can I share my screen real quick? Because this could be actually pretty instructive, actually. It's not a bad one to look at real quick. Joe, you can see the screen okay?
Yes, I can.
All right, so you look at all these, and let me tell you how I would play this out. Listeners, we do post these to YouTube, so you can see the charts. If you're on Spotify, Apple, or one of the other great podcasting platforms, I'll do my best to walk you through it. The stock has pretty much gone sideways since last September, in that $90 range up until, oh gosh, probably the end of April when it actually traded back below the 200-day moving average and broke through. So Joe, the kiss of death for me is when you break that 200-day moving average and the 21-day and the 50 are both below, right? So that should have been a lot of support, an uptrending 21, the 50-day could have curled up. It was above the 200, yet it failed and broke through. So now you've got all of this resistance here at the 21-day, which now has crossed over the 50-day, is tracking lower. The 50-day, which is now rolling over. The 200-day, which is probably going to roll over. The other thing I'm looking at here, though, Joe, is I don't know if you can see this kind of orange bar across the bottom. If you connect that low of 76.74, which is pretty right at the bottom of this saucer formation, and go across, we're challenging that today.
Yep.
My expectation, or what I'd like to see, would be a rally off of this point back into the low 80s. And then if it was my money and I had done my work and I decided, you know what, I got other names I want to own, I'm going to make Ollie's be from Missouri and prove itself before I'll go back into it, I would be selling that rally. So if that 21 days rolling over here and the 50 days rolling over, we get that bounce off of this channel, bottom of the channel here at 76.74, close at 76.30, something like that. We rally back up. I'd probably be looking to exit somewhere in the 80s if I had a better idea that I wanted to be invested in, because to me, that's a high risk reward trade. You know, the assumption that it can clear all of that resistance and then get out and then break out to new highs certainly can do it, but I would view that as a relatively high risk to reward scenario. So I would be looking for a more favorable setup, unless, again, I had really, really high conviction in Ollie's army.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's not a huge position of mine anyway. So at this point, I was thinking something similar. If it rallies on Monday or at some point over the course of the next week, that I would like to get out in the $80 range or a little bit more. So that's actually a pretty good segue, if I do say so myself, into some NASDAQ chart talk that we wanted to do this week, and then we can get into kind of a broader discussion about charts. So Todd, I know before we started recording, you were talking about some pretty distinct patterns that we were seeing in the overall NASDAQ in the QQQ this week, right?
Yeah, there are a few different things that are converging together that have me feeling like the next 2 weeks, actually, I feel like I think we have a good shot at rallying off the NASDAQ lows. And I feel like this week was one of those weeks where it was a tug of war. You had a battle happening. You had all of these gap up opens that would then, you know, the action would be come down and fill that gap up. And then this gap down opens where then you would rise and then you would come down, and you'd fill that low. And I felt like there's all right, we're just churning here, and we're just fighting the good fight. And there were some things that I was looking at that kind of make me want to tilt towards more positive on the NASDAQ, which has been way more beat up than the S&P. You know, the growth area has been way more beat up than the S&P. And one is post-election year seasonality is usually favorable, where you get a mid-May. So post-presidential election years, typically you get a little divot in the middle of May, and then you can kind of rally up again. Normally, you have solid seasonality for NASDAQ that runs through June. So that would be attractive to me. You had the AAII sentiment survey, the number of people who are bullish retreated back down to levels last seen in January, right around the end of January, where we put it in an intermediate term low in the S&P. And we had the put call ratio, which is a really good indicator too of oversold. Whenever the put call goes above 1.00 for more puts than calls, then that typically coincides with max negative and a good buy opportunity as well. We got to 1.05, I think, intraday at one point midweek. But one of the things that I thought was really kind of interesting to see, I want to pull up my chart, see if we can see it or not. Let's see if I share my screen. And I'm actually going to go to our Discord. I'm going to log into our Discord here, Joe. And good little reminder.
Shameless plug for our Discord. Yeah, I'll drop a link in the show notes. But yeah, if you haven't joined yet, we really had some great conversation this week. And it's a great opportunity to ask questions and share ideas. It's been fun to observe this and see some really great technical conversation this week.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to go up here to find that point where I was. Yeah, here it is. Okay. So Joe, you can see this chart okay with the QQQ?
Yeah, you might want to make it a little bit bigger if you just click on it. There you go.
All right. So you'll notice people who are watching on YouTube can see this. I'll try again. It's what I was just describing, listeners, where you had these. This is basically a 10-day chart of the QQQ. And I'm basically showing how we had these gap downs, and then we would rally up, fill the gap, and then gap down, gap. So gap down, rally, fill the gap down, sell off, sell off, sell off, sell off, gap open. Hit the bottom of the gap, drop down, fill the gap, rally, another gap, rally, fill the gap, another gap, fill the gap, fill the gap, fill the gap. So again, and then on this whole period, you basically were range bound between 316 on the QQQ and 328 on the QQQ. So just again, just showing just how much of a technical battle it's been this past week. And then the other thing I wanted to point out too is that look at the NASDAQ 100 chart, and you can see how you had the sell-off here on the May 11th, right? And the volume was accelerating from the 10th to the 11th and the 12th, all above average sell-off days, right? Then you had that day on the 12th, then you had this up day on heavy volume, an up day on light volume, hit the 50-day and rolled sideways, a retest of the 12th low on the 19th on heavy volume up. Yesterday was light volume up challenge of the 50-day, and then today was down on average volume. But if I pull up, Joe, the NASDAQ composite, the volume tells a slightly different story, because now you're looking at all the components in the NASDAQ, and there's only been one above average volume day in the past, well, since March. So it's just basically been a whole heck of a lot of churn, people just waiting and watching just to see what happens. So, you know, I think that this week could very well have been an interesting turning point. Bottoms can be very sloppy, and it's important to remember that, because and to pay attention where those gaps are that need to be filled still, because you don't want to get shaken out of what could have been the bottom, right? So Joe, the thing that I would be watching from here, or I'm going to be watching from here, is not necessarily whether or not we are up or down on a daily basis, but whether or not we're making higher lows each time.
Yeah.
So we're selling off, but we're kind of finding our footing at a little bit higher than the last time. As long as we're doing that, that's healthy. And I'm gonna stay with my foot on the gas pedal. I'm probably about 97% invested again.
That's quite a lot. That might be more than me, actually.
Yeah.
And I was just complaining about how I don't have enough cash.
Yeah. I've basically spent a whole bunch of bullets over the course of the last week.
Yeah. So while we're on the while we're on kind of a chart roll here, I wanted to use this as an opportunity to open it up to kind of a broader discussion, maybe a debate. We'll see. This was a question that one of our Discord members had posted in the chat earlier this week. Are you a chartist or a fundamental/story investor? Pretty simple question, definitely not a simple answer. So Todd, generally speaking, after talking about all those charts, are you a chartist or do you look for a story?
Yes.
I saw that coming.
But, you know, Joe, if there's one thing I've learned in 30, however long I've been doing this, is that I don't turn away a tool from my toolbox, right? I am all about making sure I have the right tool in my toolbox for the right market, right? So oftentimes I'm asked, okay, this is a great question, right? Comes up many times. I'm story first in that I need to have a good handle on the company, handle on how the company is winning in its industry, and a handle on how big that industry opportunity is, the total addressable market. So I need to feel that way. I need just personally. Now, I know plenty of people who are just solely fundamental, and I know plenty of people who are solely technical, and it works for them and that's their style. That's great. For me, I'm story first, and then I use the technicals, the charts, to inform my decision. So if it's got a horrible chart and I love the story, I'm going to wait until that chart looks better. If I like the story but the chart breaks down, my assumption is that somebody smarter than me, the global marketplace, has found something about this company that I don't fully understand. So that's going to make me very, very antsy about my position. And one of the things that I've learned over time, and people will say, oh, Todd, not diamond hands. Okay, listen, I'm a survivalist, all right? I've seen way too many people wipe out because of diamond hands in the wrong stocks, right? You think you have maximum conviction. You think this is the one that's going to be the money. Well, guess what? The Amazons are few and far between. Everybody always throws Amazon out. Amazon's like what? All right, so Amazon, Facebook, oh, you and I can name them. That should tell you something. If you and I can name the truly disruptive stocks where you should absolutely have had diamond hands, and they come to our mind. There's over 5,500 stocks, Joe. So the odds are that the stock that you're looking at, if it's not one of those names I just alluded to, is the diamond hand one you should be holding for the next 20 years. The odds are tilted out of your favor. So anyways, a long answer, short, I guess, would be for me, for my style, I need to understand the story, right? I need there to be a good story, but then I'll use the charts to inform my decision-making on both the entry and the exit.
That definitely makes sense. I would just add in there as well, like, usually I'm a bit more, Todd, I might be wrong about this, but I think I'm a bit more selective with my stocks than you are, and that just might be a matter of circumstance, because obviously I have a lot less money to play with than you do. But also, like, there are businesses, specific businesses and complete industries that I will avoid just off of principle. For example, I don't buy traditional energy stocks. Oil, petroleum, will never touch it, just because of principle. And I just think that the future is not in their favor as well. But there are, I would say that, like, there, I will see a company and whether I've done business with them or whether I just know that they treat their employees well, or they have a really good business model that's really sustainable. A great example of like a very sustainable business model, regardless of kind of macroeconomic circumstances, would be like Visa or MasterCard. Like they're always going to have, they're always going to have a new record amount of transactions, almost regardless of what happens. They're always going to be profitable. So stuff like that. Then, you know, I'm also frankly quite a lot younger than Todd. And so I don't have to worry about, well, what if this stock doesn't turn around in 5 years if it starts to stumble? Because realistically, I could easily hold a stock for 50 years if I wanted to. So for me, it's not, I don't play the short-term game. And so I'm not too worried about an entry or an exit point, because there are very few stocks that I buy with the intention of holding for, you know, a couple of months, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked on the show before about how, you know, I have two buckets that I typically label my my stocks into when I first buy them. My forever bucket, and again, when I say forever, it's a mindset. So if I look at Amazon, or I look at some of these genetic testing stocks, to me, I don't care where the chart goes after I've made my buy. This is a forever mindset. As long as my thesis remains intact, I'm going to stick with those stocks. And then I have my rentals, Joe. And that's where you and I differ, where, you know, you won't touch some of these other baskets. I will. I'm willing to do that. But I call them rentals. So I'm going to play them while they're working, but I have no intention of having them become core pieces of my portfolio. And both approaches are completely fine. You know, I think that, you know, no one, if I go back to my early days, so, you know, I started full time in the business in the late 90s. And, you know, so for the 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, until it got basically creamed in 2000, 2001 with the internet bust, I was thinking very similarly, you know, where I would hold things. I just buy, because I would get bailed out every time. And it wasn't until, you know, we had that major dislocation where literally companies just disappeared. They went bankrupt. They went out. Your money never came back. It wasn't until I got whacked over the head with that kind of an experience that made me a little bit more focused on risk control. But also, to your point, as I was getting older and I had more responsibilities and stuff, then things changed for me too. When you're, you know, younger, you're just starting out in your career or whatever, you, like you said, you can be more, who cares, right? If it goes by up or down or up sideways or whatever, it's not like, it's not, maybe not as big a deal. And then when you're married and kids and you're getting older, then maybe it becomes a little bigger deal. But yeah, know thyself, right, Joe? Know thyself. Know what works for you and your style.
For sure. So I wanted to also touch upon another great question that came up in our Discord server this week. And this is again, it's a pretty general question, so I'll just read it. One of our server members asked, does the talk about bubbles, meaning market bubbles, pretty much come and go on a regular basis? For me as an investor, it's the first time I have to see the market adapt to rumors of that magnitude. I believe this was in the context of cryptos, but it definitely can apply to the overall, to really any financial market, right?
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of that, Joe?
I think that just from following the news as closely as I have, following the market news, that is, as closely as I have over the past year to year and a half, and especially since we started making this podcast, and I feel like I've really been on top of things. I think that it kind of depends on who you're listening to and who you're talking to. Generally, I think that Todd, you and I follow some pretty respected and well-versed people on Twitter specifically. And those aren't the types of people who are going to be speculating about a market bubble every 2 months. But for sure, there has been speculation in my Twitter feed about a market bubble, off and on. Sometimes it's the whole market. Sometimes it's more specific. More specifically, I've heard talk off and on about a real estate bubble, which of course we've seen before. But yeah, I think that it really depends on who you're tuned into. And sorry if that's kind of a cheap answer, but I don't think that on a grand scale, your parents or your aunts and uncles or whomever is investing their money. I don't think these people lose sleep over a market bubble every couple months. Maybe people on CNBC do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, we, you know, since probably the mid-90s, we really started getting financial television, people having to fill 24/7 news cycles with financial news. I think you definitely get a lot of, you know, fear and greed signals flashing that are not real true fear and greed signals. I do think that we have seen a number of substantial bubbles over time, over my career anyways. And I feel like the action that we saw in the SPAC world, in the pre-revenue companies, the high growth companies, that was bubblicious in a way. And I feel like the unwind that we've seen there is very typical of what past it happened in the past when bubbles pop, if you will. So, I mean, I suppose you can get specific bubbles within subcategories. And that's different, of course, than, you know, a bubble in a entire asset class like real estate, like you alluded to, or maybe like, you know, we saw with stocks in say 2000. A lot of people were drawing comparisons to 2000 to last year. I don't think that was fair because the Fed was doing very different things in 2000 versus 2020. And I think that it was more of a subset of the market. It wasn't all tides lifting. It was really just the SaaS plays and then later morphing into the SPAC plays and then later morphing into the crypto. So it's kind of in this rotating speculative frenzy along the way that we've seen. Nothing that I have seen in the last, you know, 2 years shocks me. Like, I don't look at it and go, oh my gosh. I mean, yes, I learn something new every day, but I think that generally that the twainism that history rhymes is holding true. It may not be repeating exactly, but there's nothing that makes me go, oh, I never, that's completely out of bounds or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that what happened last April or last March, excuse me, was bubblicious, as you said. It was certainly unprecedented. We've never seen the market drop like that and rebound so quickly. But also, as you've heard everybody saying in, you know, every business meeting and TV commercial you've seen over the past year, these are unprecedented times. And so as cliche as it is, I don't think you can really call COVID a market bubble either. We just didn't know last March how it was going to pan out, and we didn't know if our economy was going to be shut down for 2 months or 2 years, and so it was maybe a bit exaggerated, but it does seem like a fairly appropriate reaction in
retrospect. Yeah, well, I'll marry, if you go back and you look at my Twitter feed from that February, March, and April time period, one of the things you'll see me continually pounding the table on saying, wait until you see the fiscal and monetary response to this. Wait until you see how the floodgates get unleashed and support these markets. And that's exactly what we saw. And I think that what the behavior that we saw, Joe, coming out of that was exactly what you would expect in an early cycle move of the economy supported by Fed and monetary and fiscal policy. And I think and this is where the rhyming comes in. So you had this unprecedented events, but it's precedent in that shocks, September 11th, 2001, whatever, these shocks happen and there is a response. And then that response kicks off this expansionary period. What may be is different this time was that compression of it, right? So that's where the rhyming is. So it's not repeating, it's rhyming. And the rhyme is that it was far more compressed fall and then far more compressed rally. And I think that the reason for that maybe was because we learned valuable lessons in 2008, 2009 in just how quickly you need to respond to these things. I mean, we're in 2008, we were debating letting Lehman fail. We were debating, you know, what companies will we let fail? What ones will we survive? And shouldn't, you know, for true capitalism, shouldn't a bunch of companies fail? And there was a lot of this debate happening in 2008 that was stretching out the response time. And then it was when we started to really get serious about responding fiscally, monetarily, that bottom got made in March of 2009 and kicked off, you know, a crazy vertical until July of the next year.
Right. All right. So wrapping that up and getting on to a bit of an unconventional smattering this week. And so we had a good chart talk earlier in the episode, and this smattering is definitely going to be related to those charts. And we're going to see a lot of charts right now that are fairly similar to the Ollie's Bargain Outlet chart that we talked about a few minutes ago. So Todd, I know this week you wanted to kind of focus on stocks that maybe you don't want to buy right now. And some of these might be some pretty notable names, right?
Yeah. I mean, I thought I would look at some low scoring stocks in the research. And kind of give you a few examples of how I may like a story on a stock, but if the setup isn't right on the chart, then I'll wait until the setup is right. And some of these listeners, hey, listen, you may be long some of these stocks because some of our FinTwit favorites, you know, and I get it, right? It's just, this is me personally and what I look for and how I approach the world. And I'm just trying to share that with you in hopes of maybe sharing some of the things and tricks and tips that I've learned over the years. So don't beat me up too badly if I mention your stock. I totally get there. I've been there. I've done that. But yeah, let's go ahead and share the screen again. And let me pull up those a couple of these charts of the low scoring stocks. So the first one I'll start with is Amwell. And that's America Well Corporation. They are a competitor to Teladoc, they're in that remote health, they're a remote health provider. And, you know, of course, I can wrap my arms around that conceptually. It's a huge disruptive technology. I really do believe that over time, we're going to migrate further and further away from going to physical doctor's offices for basic routine and chronic care management to these other more convenient, easier solutions. So that's the story. But again, low scoring, one of the worst scoring stocks in our large cap report yet again this week, and it has been for the better part of 2021. And this setup here, just I can't buy it here. I mean, this is gonna be a Missouri stock. It's gotta prove itself to me. You know, you've got very anemic volume, except for this one this reversal day here on the heavy sell-off day on the 13th. The 14th buyers came back in, lower volume than the sell day, but still above average volume. But then the volume's just been puttering the last few days. It's just, there's no real conviction here. So for me, this is a stock that I'm perfectly happy to stay on the sidelines on and not participate in. The next one I'm going to pull up is definitely a FinTwit name, Skills. Again, I can craft a story that I can buy into here. Operates a platform that helps players discover mobile games and compete against one another. That's obviously a very good business to be in because people are using the mobile devices more and more as gaming and entertainment, right? Rather than just as a means for communication. And you can see by the revenue, 92% year-over-year revenue growth. I mean, that's outstanding in the March quarter. But I mean, look at the distribution the stock has been under since February, Joe, when it had this. See, this is the sell the vertical I talk about, Joe.
Yep.
When you get three, and usually it's 3 days. In that third day, you sell the strength on that third day. Now, if you didn't own the stock, I could totally see you saying to yourself, oh, well, this is just going to fill this gap and I'm going to buy it in here. Well, guess what? When it broke down below the 50 day, that was a clue. All right. That was a failed rally to the 21, failed, broke the 200, the 50 day, volume rising, rallied up, failed to hold the 50 day again, fell down. Another signal that you've got a problem stock on your hand. 200 day broke down. Now we're talking about in April. Traded down to $12.40. And of course, people were like, you know, why is this thing, you know, selling off? It's got huge, great numbers. And we had this big rally, right? Went from 1240 to 22 because of ARK. ARK was out, went out and went, you know, bargain shopping and bought that stock, right? I won't buy that. When you break down like that, right? And you've got that much overhead supply, all these people who bought it from say $24 all the way up to $46, who are now in hope and prayer mode saying, get me back to my cost so I can get the heck out. It's very, very hard to overcome that. And sure enough, you'll see we got that 3 or 4 days of rally back to the 200, failed the 200 again, sold back off again, and now been trading sideways for the better part of 4 weeks. That's just not a chart setup, Joe, that I can get. I just don't like it. So yes, I can craft a story where I would want to own this. And I'm totally fine, Joe, of missing the bottom on this. Because I feel like if it does break out and it gets above, say, 20, 21, actually, we'd have to clear the 21.69, so maybe like 22 and then pull back a little bit towards the 20, then I would probably take it. And I'm happy to ride it back up as high as it'll go or whatever, you know. But for me right now, it's a story stock that I don't want to traffic in. A third stock, again, similar FinTwit kind of name, Lemonade. Lemonade helping to connect people who want insurance with insurance. And, you know, they started off with rental insurance. They're pivoting into other types of insurance now. It's obviously a very large market opportunity. But again, you had this huge move. And look, Joe, 1, 2, 3, vertical. This one was weird because you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 before the retreat. But 1, 2, 3, vertical. That's a straight line rocket ship. You got to sell that rally. Sell that rally. And then you broke down. You've been in distribution pretty much ever since February. And now again, you tried to recover the 200-day moving average here. And it rolled and failed. And now put in a new low at 59.87, lowest since last November. And now you're rallying back. But look at the volume, Joe. The last 5 days, significantly below average volume on this rally. And now you're coming into a lot of resistance. Now, if it can clear this resistance, again, I can make a story for the stock, right? I can craft a story for it. But I wouldn't want to own it until it had broken out and cleared all that noise. So that, Joe, I wanted to provide a little bit of color into how I look at stocks that score poorly in our research. If I've got a fundamental story that backs it up, but the chart doesn't back it up, how I would be approaching it.
Yeah, I think that's great, great advice, at least generally, not necessarily stock specific. Again, you might not agree with the Todd's assessment of Lemonade or of Skills, but that's okay. You know, there are plenty of people out there, including sometimes Todd and I mutually disagree on things. And hey, absolutely. If I might just say, Discord is a great place to have those conversations. I'll drop a link in the show notes when we get this published. And I think we're going to leave it there, and hopefully we can get outside and so enjoy some of this beautiful weather we're having. Right, Todd?
Awesome. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you soon, Joe.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.